Soul searching is not because they have a soul, it's because they're looking for a soul.
I mean, if you want another soul, maybe. Like,
That's
so,
not
like,
even close to.
stock up.
Come on, that's not even. Anyway, this is the 13th episode of Too Cool for Podcast. I'm sure you guys saw that one coming because that's how introductions work these days. Now that we have no fancy music work to bleed into what we're talking about.
We don't need that.
We don't. But we just got two smooth or one manly voice and then one.
Music is for the weak.
One, like if we were a rap group or a group, one of us would be the rapper, the other one would be the
I'm the Q-tip.
Chorus. You'd be the chorus singer.
I'm the Q-tip of this.
Because his voice is so much softer than mine. But that's okay, you know? It's okay. It happens. Not all of us win the genetic lottery.
Sorry to hear that.
We got a good show ahead for us today, or for you guys today. We'll be talking, as promised, two films, both of which came out. Each of the last 2 weeks, the first of which is Don John, directed and written by Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
JGL.
Yep, the second of which is Gravity, which was directed and written, I believe, by Alfonso Cuarón. Yes, yes, yes. Anyway, those are the movies we're talking, and then provided we have time, we're going to talk a little bit of television, starting off with The Walking Dead, which
is coming back
Sunday. Yeah, coming back, making its much-anticipated return this Sunday. October 13th, is that right?
Anticipated by,
by a lot of people. A lot of people. Yes, nice try. And then we're talking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or Daniel Lee is talking Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and telling us why we actually want to watch this show, if we want to watch this show. And also, if we have time, a surprise subject for you, because all of you care about it so much. But we'll see. We'll see how much...
I think you care more than anybody else.
No, I think a lot of people care. That's why it's so big right now. Okay. So drop it. But bring it up later.
Dropped.
But bring it up later if you get the chance.
It has been dropped.
Yes. But anyway, first of all, we want to start with the most recent movie to come out, which was Gravity, which we saw Thursday night.
Yes. Yes. That we did.
Yeah, yeah. So
midnight release.
We went at 11.
Oh, wait.
Or 10. we went a little earlier than midnight.
Yeah.
But that's cool.
We're old now.
Yeah, movie theaters are doing that now. So, and since we're no longer under 25, we can't really hang with everybody else. So we just go, you know, earlier.
Yeah. Eventually, we'll have like Monday night premieres somewhere down the line.
Monday's a rough day for me.
Dates become meaningless.
I don't know if I want to go on a Monday, but
we saw Don John on a Monday.
Yeah, I know, but the day after it came out.
Gotcha.
God, we are old.
Got you there.
This is getting worse and worse.
Got you there.
All right. Anyway, let's talk movies like we're supposed to.
All right, we'll do that.
Starting with Gravity. Okay.
Yes.
I don't know if you got anything good to add about Gravity, but if you do, now's a chance. Because I'm just going to talk over you if you don't.
Space is super scary.
Okay.
That's all I got to say about that.
Moving on.
It is my worst nightmare, being stranded in space.
I don't know why you're yelling. If that's your worst nightmare, your nightmares are not at all grounded in reality. Because there's no chance you're going to space.
Let's be real here. Nightmares are irrational, Anthony.
Not all of them, no. Some of them are based in, you know... things like, that we can see and touch. Space is not one of those things for you.
Space.
You're not an astronaut. No offense. You know?
Touch space.
You're a lot of things. You're not an astronaut. So you don't have to worry about
that. You don't know that.
But the good thing about this movie is that it gives us something terrifying and kind of a realm that we haven't really seen in that light before.
Yes. Right?
Like we've seen, you know, there are, you know, the Star Trek movies. There are, what else? Apollo 13, Apollo 18, which is probably terrible.
But most of these other, like, space movies actually feature... I don't know, some kind of disaster in the form of, like, maybe asteroids or aliens. But this strictly works with the vacuum out there. The vacuum of space, which I really dug. Because
and the lack of gravity.
It doesn't get explored enough, I think.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to explore space.
Yes.
Very big, very vast.
Which I feel is a lot more scary...
and there's a lot of space.
...than aliens or asteroids.
Well... yeah, well, both of those things exist in space, assuming aliens exist. You know, so it's kind of like the nature of the of not Earth, I guess.
Yes.
I mean, if a scientist were listening to this podcast for whatever reason, we'd probably sound like complete idiots. But that's okay.
You know? Scientists are idiots.
By the way, speaking of that, I've heard that scientists have come out and kind of trashed the realism or the reality of this movie.
They do that all the time, like medical students coming out and trashing House. Like, who cares?
I mean,
whatever.
But why? Who cares? Like, just it's not relevant. It's not.
It's irrelevant. It's just a fictional story, and like the subject they take.
Entertainment.
Yes.
And they're just I mean,
the focal point is
need a life, right? Like, why are they?
Yes, exactly.
What medical student is sitting there watching House and saying, "Oh, come on!
Like, oh, come
on! I'm gonna write my thesis on this
flesh-eating bacteria."
Yeah.
In Minnesota. Whatever.
Yeah. I got you. But anyway, so space is scary, obviously.
So scary.
Yeah, good fact to give us.
Best boogeyman out there.
But I mean, did you like this movie? I mean, I was okay with it. I wasn't, you know, in awe with it, but we didn't see it in 3D. We didn't see it in IMAX, and I imagine that's what it's kind of made for.
Yeah.
So I didn't get the full cinematic experience. Mm-hmm. Also, at the same time, I'm not really a guy who appreciates that kind of stuff.
Yes. And then the way it was shot, I mean, you could clearly tell, like, it was intended to be viewed that way.
The debris, the floating, the stuff in your face.
Oh, yes.
Definitely would have been enhanced in a 3D experience.
But I feel like it was still, like, strong on its own without, like, the visuals. I mean, the visuals are already stunning in 2D, whatever. But the things that it deals with, I think, could carry the movie on its own.
Which things are you talking about?
Just, like, a woman surviving out there, being stranded alone by
herself. I mean, that's the scariest thing that we have, right?
Yes.
I mean, no sound in space. The beginning of the movie just gives us that little tidbit, right? You know, there's no sound in space. Nothing carries. It's extremely cold up there. And what's to stop you from propelling and propelling and propelling a la George Clooney's character in the
exactly.
movie?
Exactly. I mean, if you're going to put your character in the worst situation possible, where would you put him? Maybe, I don't know, an argument could be made for, like, underwater caves, caverns, or whatever, but space, where there is, like, less than, like, 0.00000, you know, we could go on, percentage of, like, survival, that is, like, the most...
Truly a horrifying experience.
Yes.
Yes. Truly horrifying. I agree. Not exactly something we'll have to worry about unless Earth gets exploded in the not-too-distant
future. I worry about
future.
It constantly. That is why it's my nightmare.
It doesn't make sense. But just speaking to... I guess the horror of the movie, I mean, this is, for all intents and purposes, a horror movie, right? Like a survival horror movie.
Yes.
With a with an environment, I should say, mm-hmm. that, I mean, really, there's not... words can't describe how scary that is.
Yes.
And I don't think I'm doing it justice because my words are very soft and they don't mean anything. But seriously, like, that's a shocking, like, movie just to watch. And it's not very comfortable experience. At the same time, it's a very... awesome experience.
Yes, I was very uncomfortable walking into that movie, and I want to talk about the sound effects.
Okay.
Very realistic, you know. You see all these things.
Well, there's no sound in space.
Yes, exactly.
So what sound effects?
Destroyed in the background and in the foreground. We also see in that one instance where Sandra Bullock is trying to cut the parachute off the shuttle in order to escape. From, like, the debris that it's flying towards her.
Yes.
Yes. And then you see, like, how calm she is while she's, like, trying to operate this thing. And then things are just exploding and going crazy behind her. I think that was... why I want to address that is I feel like half of it was, like, her trying to calm herself down mentally. But also because she can't hear all that thing behind her is why she was able to, like, work steadily... On the shuttle to free
herself
from the debris.
She's a doctor, Daniel.
Yeah.
So she's trained in, you know.
But
the...
I don't think she's trained for that kind of
situation.
Nobody's
trained for that kind of stuff. But when you can't hear it, is it really there?
Yeah.
I guess
exactly.
This answers the old tale,
right?
It
really helps. And then I think that, like, elevated that scene for me.
No. Let's just get into some deeper philosophical conversation. Like, doesn't that answer the age-old question of if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's around, does it really make a sound? I mean, there's no sound coming from that debris, but
there's
debris
no
is still there, right?
So let's go drop
there.
A tree in the space.
Yeah, I guess.
Let's go chop a space tree down.
Very literal.
See if it makes a sound.
It's very literal. I was just kind of going with, you know, debris in space. But yeah, sure. Let's do that.
But I'm just saying, like, the sound effects were really effective in the
very redundant.
In the movie. And within the movie setting itself, like, they played with the sound to its utmost potential, I feel.
which was nine. There was not a lot of sound in that movie.
That's also a sound.
Silence is sound.
Silence
is the absence of sound. Stop.
Black is a color.
Black is the absence of color.
No.
Yes.
Well, we could argue about this all day, but let's move on.
We could,
okay?
But you'd be
okay.
Wrong. So there's no point, right?
Stop dragging this along, Anthony.
Not dragging this along.
Jesus.
I mean, I don't really have much to say on this movie. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not really like one of the best movies for me this year, but I mean... that's what movies are made for, right? Like, that's what the cinematic experience is for.
Just giving this you kind of a movie. New kind of experience is also very effective.
Let me ask you a question, though. I mean, not really trying to belittle either movie or really pigeonhole us into being like some sort of, you know, comic book ranking podcast, but which, I know, right? But which would you say is more effective use of, I guess, the cinematic experience, you know, watching movies in a theater, this movie or Avatar? Because I feel like really at this point, that's the only competition I've seen for it in the last 4 years. Just as a movie going experience.
How to Train Your Dragon.
That wasn't an option.
Honestly, I did see Avatar in 3D and I thought that was really effective, but I have yet to see this in 3D, so I can't really comment.
Because we haven't seen it in 3D, that's the only reason.
Yeah, that's the only reason I can't really compare the two right now. Missed, but that's an interesting question.
We missed the boat there.
That's an interesting question.
I mean, really, that's the only movie that comes to mind that used, you know, the theater so well, right? Like, you go to the theater for a certain kind of, you know, for two things. You go to watch a good movie, or you go to be absorbed in, I guess, the environment that, in which you're watching it, right? And this is one of those movies that you go to for, obviously, both, but more so for that experience, because it almost provides you the perfect movie going, you know.
That's also why I wanted to see Pacific Rim in IMAX, but we also failed to do that also.
Yeah, I'm not an IMAX guy.
Before we move on to something else, I also wanted to talk about the cast.
What about it?
Sandra Bullock and George Clooney. Mm-hmm. I think, one of our friends brought up that, like, Sandra Bullock could be interchangeable for any other actress.
Okay.
And I kind of disagree, because I think she struck the right chord of being both, like, vulnerable and strong at the same time. And I felt that this movie really needed that kind of actress to pull it out. And she was really competent.
Competent is not really, to me, that's like saying someone's adequate. Choose your words
she
better,
but
I get what
you're
saying.
Beyond adequate.
I get what you're saying. So she was extraordinary? What?
She is give me extraordinarily... A strong adjective, please.
She was extraordinary. Adequate. She's just really, really ordinary and adequate. She was great. Let's just say she was great.
Yeah, she was good.
And part of the reason why I think she was great was because she's not, you know, like the other rumored casting called, or the other people who are rumored to be cast for that specific role.
Like who?
The young Scarlett Johansson, the young Natalie Portman. You kind of want someone with some age, because it gives that movie, wait for it, some gravity. Right? And gives that role somewhere. Because it just I mean, do you really buy it if it's ScarJo or, you know, and Natalie Portman's making play anything, but do you really buy like a doctor in space who's 30 years old? Because I don't.
But, yeah, so, you're right. You're right about that. But Sandra Bullock also kind of brings this, like...
No, you don't get it. I'm agreeing with you. Yeah. I'm saying that Sandra Bullock is not 30 years old, obviously.
Right.
She's closer to 50 than she is to 30, right? She's probably closer to 50 than she is to 40. And, I mean, this could easily be fact-checked, but I'm just not doing it. So all I'm saying is her age definitely helped her with that role, and just her understanding and, you know, I guess her range now is it's growing.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, take that for what you will. It's just the opinion of one guy who doesn't really, I mean, I probably won't watch this movie again, but it was
Was enough, but like I feel like it's worth it.
It is something you would like show somebody though. Like, hey, watch this movie. Yeah. If they haven't heard about it, you know,
right.
It happens.
George Clooney was in this movie.
Yeah, but that's a role that could have been interchangeable, if you ask me.
I don't know. Like, he had, like, short time to establish a lot of things, and he brings on that charisma. And then, you know, like, it has to be believable for somebody to be able to instill that much confidence in the other actress. And I think he was good for that purpose. And I don't think there's too many actors out there who can do that kind of thing.
I think so. I mean, honestly, if you put Sam Rockwell in there, I'd be just as happy. You know what I mean? And that's just off the top of my head. Like, that role meant something, but the movie didn't hinge on that role. Whereas it did with Sandra Bullock's character.
No, but I also understand the casting choice.
I'm not disagreeing with that, sure.
Gets down to.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. That to me, that one, like if we're talking about like our friend's opinion, that role is more interchangeable than Sandra Bullock's character. And that's not something I think you'll disagree with.
We could shake on that.
I don't want to shake your hand.
No.
But we can agree to move on. But we can agree to move on, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, next on the docket.
Don John.
Yes. From our boy.
JGL.
I don't know why I keep setting you up like this. But, okay. I don't want to lead this conversation.
Because it's very fashionable.
Why don't you lead this conversation? Since you're the Don.
All right, so, like, this movie deals with a lot of, like, different perspectives, correct? Like, how we view love and sex.
I'm sarcastically looking, like, obviously, yes.
Yes.
Doesn't
yes.
any movie deal with perspectives?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. You should go on, build to something real. Go ahead. I guess you have to get that out of your way.
What I want to say is, like, we see, like, them, well, at least, like, the... At least JGL going through a maturing phase.
Mm-hmm.
You know, finally reaching...
Yeah, he's dynamic, obviously. Yes, yes,
yeah.
yes.
Finally reaching that point where he accepts, like, all this porn that he's watching is just another fantasy.
Whoa. You're skipping, like, a lot of stuff here. A lot of substance here. You're just going straight to the change. I mean,
I'm in a hurry.
How about you tell us about the character a little bit?
Okay.
Jesus.
So JGL plays this... What?
Go.
JGL... plays this Jersey guy who is really, really into porn.
You are so, so eloquent.
Yes.
And articulate. I love your word choice. And Jersey guy who's into porn.
Jesus. Some Jersey guy who's into porn.
Right. I would stop.
That's the most reductive.
If I was anybody, I would turn us off right now.
What are you talking about?
Come on.
What are you talking about? This is why people tune in.
Because we have nothing important
to
say.
This is why people tune in. Jersey guys... watching porn.
Let me just cut him off right now. Plenty of good things and plenty of bad things will be said about every subject we're going to talk about today. And you could go on without listening to us and probably be better off for it.
No.
I'm going to be completely honest with you.
An apple a day keeps the doctor away.
See what I mean?
We're the apple.
Drop the mic. Anyway.
And doctors are bad
anyway,
people.
Anyway, tell us about this Jersey guy who's into porn.
Yeah, so this guy, you know, he has his own idea of like his own idealized... sex, I guess. The act of sex. His mm-hmm. own idealized... Oh, man. What am I trying to say?
I don't know. Where are you going with this?
Anyways, he has his own idea of what a sex should feel and
what
look like.
Sex should feel like.
What a sex. Yeah. Like male and female.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay. So he goes through life just right? like going after one girl after another, but like he can never feel fulfilled because... what he sees in porn looks so much better than what he actually goes through with all these other girls.
Mm-hmm.
So he continues going on, you know, like he...
The overarching theme of the...
The
movie,
overarching
correct?
Theme, yeah. Is that he can never get that kind of satisfaction.
I think you hit it on the head.
And on the other side, on the other side of that coin is this girl... What?
No. Go.
Scarlett Johansson, played by Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. And her idea of love comes from a lot of, like, the romantic comedies that she watches. And she feels that the guy should do everything in his power to keep the girl. And that is her own idealized love, basically.
Yeah.
And then we see those two ideas clash in this movie. And
classic screenwriting.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing I really dug about this is that, like, we see a lot of immature characters in this movie dealing with a very mature theme in a very poignant way.
And, can you elaborate?
Like, basically, like, you won't see any kind of, like, really snappy dialogues or anything like that. They all, you know, look and sound like the Jersey people that you would see from, like, Jersey Shore or whatever.
Characters. These aren't
yes.
Sorkinese. They're not speaking Sorkinese. They're speaking
mm-hmm.
What we perceive as Southern Californians to be everyday Jerseyan language, you know?
Yeah, how we perceive
how we
them
perceive
to
them
look.
To talk. And I'm sure how they perceive us to talk
sound.
Is a lot different than we're talking right now.
Exactly.
Which is fine. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But, like, they... Like, the way, like, the entire story structure is written is very... very mature, and like we see like the character interactions, and while they look simple, like they have a lot of depth to it. And I thought JGO, I don't know, it was just phenomenal writing to me personally, like the way he handled all these different subjects. And I want to ask you,
you're terrible at asking questions.
How do you feel about this movie?
Really? It's broad. I liked it. Question over. Really? Right, is that your question?
We could go on now.
No.
No. The one thing that I didn't like about this movie, I guess,
is that
like
your
just
question to me,
just the nitpick. Like, well, I'm gonna ask you about it.
Yeah.
Is
go
the
ahead.
Fact that like we see the end of the guy's journey, him finally realizing like that this is all like in his head. like this is like the idealized version of sex that yeah. you will never get. And then, but we don't see the end of the girl's journey, and yes, that kind of saddens me.
Yes, we do.
Well, like, okay, don't we do see no an end don't call of me that.
No more. That's the end of her. She's not willing to grow like he is.
Yeah, but like,
so we see her end. It's just, her end is not as happy as his.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we do see an end, but I wish she also kind of went through that maturing phase.
If she did go to the maturing phase, it wouldn't have ended with him, and it wouldn't have ended with a twist. You know what I mean? So I feel like your nitpicking takes the movie away from what the goal of the movie is.
No, the movie is already...
He's the protagonist, right? Not her, right?
Yeah.
She's just the love interest.
Yeah.
So we don't have to see her finality or her complete evolution because she's not the main character.
But
So I feel like your nitpicking is...
Yeah, it is a nitpick.
It's definitely nitpicking, and it doesn't even matter. It has no impact on the movie whatsoever.
I think I would have enjoyed it a little bit more if it did go through her journey as well. That's a little too, you know,
tidy for that. Life isn't like that. That's not realistic at all. This movie's
that's kind why,
of grounded in that, right?
That's why...
That's not realistic at all.
Movies are escapist.
All escapism. Form of television, all form of everything exactly. is escapism, yes. That's
I
great, but that doesn't
go
have any...
their journeys.
Doesn't, that's not escape. That's not what you're saying. Anyway.
You're escaping my question.
Well, you didn't ask a question.
Didn't I?
No, you didn't. That's a question right there, but it's a terrible one.
Whatever. Keep going.
All you said was something about nitpicking, and that wasn't a question. So did you have a question for me, or can I just, like, move on, or what?
Yeah,
I'm just gonna go. Yeah, I'm just gonna move on because you have no question for me because that's not what you do, I guess. What I will say about this movie is that
questions.
The realization that the main character, the protagonist, comes to, is not one that's typically seen in romantic comedies, and we can both agree that this is in one form or another a romantic comedy, right?
Yes.
Yes. And much like The Cabin in the Woods, which is a horror movie that flips horror movies on its head, this is a romantic comedy that flips romantic comedies on its head.
Genre-bending movie, yes.
Yes. And I like that. It's just, you know, it just kind of points a mirror at the people that watch those movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just says, hey, is this really what you are? But, you know, that's one of the things that I definitely liked about this movie.
That's a good point.
Just speaking to, you know, those preconceived notions of romantic comedies that the girl is infatuated with, and porn, which I guess both objectify women and create an idealized sex form for men, they both just mess with your mind, right? And this movie, at a subtext level, is about media, because the media's effect on on what the viewer or what the customer, I should say, whatever you want to call them, in this analogy, should see how they should see things.
In another word, we could say Channing Tatum is ruining girls everywhere.
What? How many romantic comedies has he been in? Come on.
He was in the
say Hugh Grant is ruining girls everywhere. Not
he was in the fake romantic comedy within the movie.
Yeah, those
which
are always
was
great.
A pretty
those are always great.
Nifty cameo.
Yeah,
between Channing Tatum and Anne Hathaway.
And Anne Hathaway, but you're getting away from the larger point, which is just, I guess, the way the media affects the way people.
And porn is ruining guys.
You know, which is a fair. It's an absolutely fair assessment because his character gets better at sex after he stops watching porn and it stops becoming one-sided.
I don't know if he gets better at sex, but I think he is able to enjoy himself more within the other person.
I think it's both.
You sure?
I think you're creating a false dichotomy where it doesn't have to be that, because they even tell him you're not so one-sided anymore, you know, whereas it used to be all one-sided. But we're dealing with, you know, adult themes here that we don't want to get into because
why
we don't
not?
Have that kind of audience. We want to be friendly for the kiddies. But anyway, just, you know, speaking to how the media affects everybody, I just like that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, someone who grew up in the eye of the media and who's kind of, you know, both taken his lumps and enjoyed his, right now is currently at the peak of his career.
Yeah.
Not to say he can't get any higher, but I'm saying right now is at the peak of his career, is able to look at that just with such objectivity, because this is, by all accounts, a guy who grew up a star, right?
Yes.
Like, this guy is as early as, I don't know, The Outer Limits, as early as Third Rock from the Sun, probably in a Goosebumps episode for all I know.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, this guy's been in the limelight for a while.
Yes. But as an
actor. And as an actor, yeah. But I mean, like, when you grow up in that limelight, no matter what it is, you tend to lose sight of the way things, I guess, are in reality. And just that he's able to see all these movies and see the way, I guess, film, Hollywood, everything like that, affects everyone's views of everything, not just love. It's impressive.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's, if anything, I'm not lauding this guy for his appearance as John Blake in Batman or The Dark Knight rises, because to me that could have been anybody. Speaking to that, okay? Speaking to that, that could have been anybody. I'm lauding him for just the clear-eyed vision and the level-headedness with which he views society and, you know, the effect that media has on people, because that's amazing. Like, how, I mean, that's just the clarity with which he sees that is really impressive. I'm you know, yeah, hands down, my hat's off to this guy.
For his debut as a director, like, he took a really...
Writer-director, yeah.
Yeah, a right approach as a person outside looking in to this entire scenario. Mm-hmm. And it was just overall very, very impressive for his debut.
Absolutely.
All I gotta say, I know I'm being redundant right now.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, yeah. We don't always agree, and we don't like to just, you know, splash praise on things like we did last week with Breaking Bad. But when it comes to Joseph Gordon-Levitt and his abilities, I mean, we really are on the same page, because while I'm not as big of a fanboy as you are, and my fanship is not at all tied to the Dark Knight Rises series or his contribution in any comic book adaptations, I am still a huge fan.
I hope you're not
letting me finish, because... Oh, yeah, I am definitely implying that. A huge fan of his work, because this is a guy who honestly started on Third Rock from the Sun, right, which is a huge show in the 90s. And somewhere along the way, he didn't get lost, but he kept working under the radar. Mm-hmm. And he sort of built his way back up. I mean, he's in these movies, you know, Stop Loss. These movies we don't even know about. These indie movies. Then he makes his way back onto the scene. I'm guessing with your favorite movie.
500 Days of Summer.
Yes, which is a great movie. Right? He makes his way back onto the scene. But, great movie. You know, yeah. So, I mean, really, that's... This guy's kind of just... Not like he started from the bottom, but he's kind of a blue-collar Hollywood actor who's right now, like we said, at the peak of his career. And... I'm just impressed by the guy. Mm-hmm. And I really hope to see more movies directed and written by him. Preferably not in the Jersey setting, because I don't know if I can do Barbara Sugarman's voice again for an entire movie.
Marvel if he Collins. Had to, any opportunity to get Tony Danza back into the set, I would love it.
Definitely.
I would love it.
Definitely the scene-stealing father of the year act, I mean, which was taken by Robert De Niro.
This is the Robert De Niro award goes to Tony Danza this year.
Different East Coast setting, because it's not Philly-based, it's New Jersey-based, mm-hmm. A place I've never been to, but I'm told it's just like that.
Yeah. Very, very strong supporting cast, basically. Scarlett Johansson, Tony Danza, and Julianne Moore, who just, like, steals the show as soon as she steps in.
It's just doing Julianne Moore things, right?
Yeah. So, like, she could have probably, like, sleepwalked her way into the set.
Oh, thanks for quoting me.
Yeah. Courtesy of Anthony.
Yeah, you're welcome. Stop pointing at me.
Amazing actress. Also, I want to ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
Has this movie made the JGL stock rise a little bit in your eyes? Maybe a little bit more than Ryan Gosling?
Well, that's not fair.
It is. We always bring up these two or the other gets brought
up. We do,
up.
But where has Gosling been the past 2 years? Where's he been since Drive?
Only God forgives.
Which people walked out of. You know, where's he been these past couple years? And I guess that speaks to...
Oh, and Gangster Squad. What's his name having these? Yeah, you're right.
I guess that speaks to what's his... You know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt having the edge there. But yeah, I mean... Joseph Gordon-Levitt's stock is as what? What are you talking about? Like, his net worth? Probably. He made a lot of money off this movie.
Not just a favoritism level, because that's all it is. Amongst our circle. I don't care about other circles.
Like, is he more favored to me right now than... Ryan Gosling?
Yes, because they were always like neck and neck in your eyes. Or maybe like Ryan Gosling would have a little edge on you.
So you're turning me into a what have you done for me lately kind of guy?
Yeah.
That's not how I measure things. I'll tell you what. They both have sentimental value for me, because Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in, like I said...
One or the other, Anthony.
Was in one of those movies those shows that I watched as a kid growing up, The Rock from the Sun. And I always liked him. He was also in 10 Things I Hate About You, which I also loved. Huge impact on my teenage life, that movie, okay? And then we got Ryan Gosling, who was in Remember the Titans, one of my favorite movies of all time, you know? And he's not even a main character in that movie. He's just one of the guys who dances a lot and can't cover anybody in football because he's slower than the people he's playing against, which is, you know, fine. But they both have huge sentimental value for me right now. I'm not going to turn this into a what have you done for me lately conversation, because I'm not that guy. I will say, though, I can't wait to see a movie that Ryan Gosling writes and directs. Let's just say that. Fair answer. Are we done with this movie?
Yeah.
Move on?
Yes.
Okay, what's next for us? Are you going to talk some Marvel's of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Are we going to talk some Walking Dead? What are we doing?
Probably save Walking Dead for the last, because Sunday's approaching, and then...
Football Sunday.
Yes. Now, Walking Dead presents Football Sunday.
Lame. What are we talking with this? Okay, so we've got last year, in my opinion, comic books reached their zenith, you know, were at the peak of their heightened careers, and they ended with, to me, comic movies ended with The Avengers and
The Dark Knight Rises.
Okay. After that, comic movies are pretty much done for me now. Mm-hmm. However, we got this spin-off show coming. Well, and Joss Whedon's...
It's three episodes in.
Three episodes in now?
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Three too many. Go on.
Well, I'm not exactly recommending this
Have you watched all the episodes already?
I've watched the first two.
So we're recording this on a Wednesday. You haven't watched tonight's airing, correct?
Yesterday's.
Yes, it's on a Tuesday?
Yesterday's episode, yeah.
I have yet to get to it. Gotcha.
But, I remember talking about the Breaking Bad season finale and then how it garnered 10 million viewers, mm-hmm. which is really great for basic cable, basically. And but
this one garnered...
This... I think it undeservingly started off with 12 million views for the first episode. I don't know how it fared with the second episode, but...
That's a lot that for is friggin' for a lot of
people
television.
Tuning in. Yes. That's the power of Disney for you, but I didn't think it was worth that. It's just a... So far, it's just been like a stock standard, you know, Joss Whedon fare. I mean, like...
What's that?
You know, kind of like the circa 90s, like Monster of the Week type of show.
Yeah.
Kind of like Buffy or Angel.
Or like every season of Dexter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of... I feel like it brings up a lot of questions about like the agency itself within the context of the show. Like how competent are they if they're bringing all these like science whiz guys into like war zones and then they're all untrained so they can't even handle themselves out there and they have like one or two agents who could actually do handle themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So like...
I'm confused.
Like I think it speaks... I don't know like... If that was their intention to bring upon this, like, questions about their own competency as far as the S.H.I.E.L.D. goes.
Uh-huh.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. agency. I felt that was kind of a little off-putting for me, honestly, because they're all these, like, really pretty people who know computers and stuff like that. But are they really necessary?
That's what we always see on these kind of shows.
Right.
Surprised over time on the CW.
But are they really necessary out on the field?
Pretty people?
Yeah.
Pretty people are necessary everywhere.
No.
Aesthetically speaking.
I mean, like, within the context of the show. You know what I mean?
Okay, aesthetically speaking, the show is good, right?
Yes.
So that's why people watch this show, because they have good-looking agents doing smart things and tough things, right? But you're saying the problem with them is that these guys don't have really a role out there?
No, they're kind of lost. They're thrown into a battlefield, but they don't know how to take care of themselves, so I don't know, like, if that's...
So it's the wrong message for S.H.I.E.L.D.
That doesn't say good things about S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, it's the wrong... I mean, so S.H.I.E.L.D.'s not as powerful. I mean, it's, what, poorly run? Or, you know, they hire the wrong guys? Maybe they, you know... I don't know.
And so far, like, this entire show has just been kind of like a fan service. Like, in the first episode...
But that's what every comic book movie is now.
Yeah. But this is just, like, the effects of the movies just... seeping into the show, and they just talk about the effects of like what the movies have brought upon in this Marvel universe, basically.
So, such like, as
in the first
that seems
episode,
like an interesting concept to me.
In the first episode, like they talk about extremists. So obviously, this takes place right after Iron Man 3 now. And in the second episode, they talk about the Tesseract weapon, and it's just like it is fan service, but it's also kind of like. Lowest form of fan service. It's like a peripheral fan service. We don't actually see like the things that we actually want to see.
Yeah, we want to see superheroes.
Yes, exactly.
So why are we watching the show is the question. And I'm not watching the show.
It just feels like it's just making references to the movies themselves, which are like the far superior products.
Yeah.
And
I'm shaking my head right now if you guys can't see.
Yeah. The show itself, it's not bad. It's a competent show.
Sounds bad.
But it feels like a really big budget CW show, if you catch my drift.
Okay, here's what I want to know. Who's watching this show? There's 12 million viewers.
Kids,
or there are 12 million viewers.
People invested in the Marvel Universe.
Is this just like a fixer in between release dates for motion pictures?
Sorry, what?
Is this just like a fix? It's not a fixture, sorry. A fix for people waiting in between Marvel releases? Like waiting for your Thor next month? Is this just a fix until then?
That could be it, too.
Huh.
Like I said, it's like
money a big... grabbing at its finest.
I know I'm adding fuel to your stupid fire that it's I don't agree fire. With.
It's ire drawn.
Stupid
from,
ire.
From fan service comic movies made that...
Hey, shut up and let me talk.
All right. I'm not going to get on my soapbox here.
All right. It's like a big budget CW show.
But I'm also not going to contribute to this conversation.
And I like CW shows. You know this for a fact.
It's a big budget CW show?
Yeah. And I like CW shows. Know,
that's a good thing.
I like CW shows, but
what heterosexual most male of its charm, age 26 likes CW shows?
Most of its charm come from the fact that it's very low budget, I feel like. How like
it has
the
a big
writing
budget. You just make up your mind.
No, I'm saying usual CW shows. Most of their charm
which
comes from the fact that they're low budget, and then a lot of the writing
assuming
tries to work
charm
around a lot of like the huge premises.
Assuming they have charm.
They do have charm.
Okay. They have charmed.
Just a terrible
back
person.
Back like 10 years ago, they had charmed.
Shut up.
was that called
like
CW
you
back then?
I don't like you.
Well, I'm out on this show, dude. I mean, there's nothing I want to... I don't really want to hear anything. But for the rest of the viewers, go ahead. Go ahead.
And,
I'm sorry.
The last point that I want to make about the show is that I doubt we'll see any kind of like meaningful synergy between the show and the movies. Like I told you before.
Yeah. So we're watching for nothing, guys. It's all empty.
It's just like references after references. I think we'll just see the backlashes from the movies affecting the show, and I think that's where like it ends, basically.
Oh, so it's
as far as the how they work together between this show and the movies.
More reactive of a show,
yeah.
I guess.
Oh. It's like, hey, did you hear about that thing in New York? That's messed up. That's like the feeling I
that's
get so far.
It. That's the end of it.
And that's my little...
I hope we're not ending this podcast on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because...
No.
God, no.
No.
Terrible.
That's why we're going to be moving on to The
Walking... For the record, I have not seen one episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. even though there have been three. I have no intention of seeing this show, watching this show, whatever verb you want to use, because my opinion will probably not change. You can call me close-minded if you want, but they pretty much closed the book for me last year on comic book anything.
Well, this show isn't going to do anything to change your mind, so...
It's all empty, right? It's all empty. It has no impact on the Marvel Universe whatsoever, right?
So far.
So, I mean, really, it's just a fix for addicts who can't wait for the next movie.
Right.
Which probably won't even be that good.
Thor 2.
Thor 2, yeah.
That
Thor
looks
2.
Pretty good.
I said probably won't even be that good.
I like Thor 1, and...
Am I watching this movie? Did I decide? What comes first? This one or Hunger Games 2? Catching Fire.
I think... They're around the same time, isn't it?
November? Oh, Hunger Games at the end of
November,
I think.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is coming out first then.
Okay. Yeah, like the 10th or 11th or something like that. Yeah. Let's just say that I am way more excited to watch Jennifer Lawrence in Catching Fire than I am to watch Chris Hemsworth in Thor. But Natalie Portman should be a nice surprise, right?
Yeah.
More of a role in this movie. Anyway, we're not talking Thor. I'm out on comic book movies. We'll see what
just
happens
get
next.
It out of your system right
we'll
now,
see.
Anthony.
No, it's gonna be a recurring theme because these movies are going to keep popping up because all they want to
so
do
tiring
is make
talking
money.
Talking about how much you hate
you
things.
Know what's tiring? Talking about comic book movies. That's what's tiring. Boom. Now let's talk about a comic book show.
You need like a separate
comic
podcast where
show.
You just talk about how much you hate comics.
I wish I was like an Adam Carolla type. Not that smart. Or that anything.
Not that good looking.
Not that anything. I'm not anything compared to that guy.
Oh, come on. You got...
No, stop. Don't just disagree with me to disagree with me, okay? So we're talking...
All right, we're going to be talking
about... Are we talking
about
Walking Dead now?
Yes.
Oh. I don't know you watched the show.
I didn't.
We spent an entire, fall recapping episodes.
Yes. And then I spent the rest of that not watching this show.
So where'd you end?
I think right after that dumb meeting between the governor and Rick.
Right, you talked
about
that.
That kind of really, I don't know, it just drove me away from the show.
And I just told you what happened at the end of the season.
Yeah.
We just kind of said, hey, the governor tried to attack the prison. They weren't there. His people.
And he just jets with Martinez.
Kind of rebelled against him and he just shot them all. Yeah.
That's not a nice thing to do.
It's not nice to shoot people.
How did he overpower, like, an entire...
Not that he overpowered him. He just unloaded his automatic machine gun.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's...
Yeah. That'll do it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people are allergic to bullets, so yeah, that'll get them done. Fatally so, even.
Yes.
Wait, so what are we talking about with this upcoming season? Really, like, is there anything you want to know? Because all I've seen so far are a few quotes here and there from
Andrew Lincoln. Are they still in the prison?
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to be a continuation of that arc taking place within the prison or whatever.
I mean, it's going to stick. I mean, from what I've read, like I said, I've seen a few quotes from Andrew Lincoln, and I've seen a few quotes from Robert Kirkman saying that they're going to be sticking more to the comic book, more so than the previous seasons, which I don't know if to me sounds like an admission of something, failure, in my opinion.
I'd say.
Yeah, I'd double that. But anyway, so, you know, that's one of the things I've heard. I've seen in the preview that they are still at the prison, yes. And you can see anywhere that the governor is still at large. They're trying to keep that a secret. I don't know if they're trying to keep that a secret or not. I'm just saying that. But they're being real coy about what his role is. However, we have seen pictures of Andrew Lincoln, spoiler alert, not having a hand, looks like, wrapped in bandages, one of his hands.
Where'd it go?
I don't know. But that's... popular story arc from the comic.
Very much so. But that sounds kind of awkward to me because after the governor's siege on prison is where they had to leave the prison and then go somewhere else. And if they're still at prison, how are they going to continue following the comic?
No, but that was just a trick. They just pulled the wool over your eyes for the governor and set up a little trap at the prison. That's what happened. So some of them were there, but they were, like, hiding, you know? And then they set up a trap for him as far as... setting off an alarm and stuff, so the zombies went after him. And God, I feel like a 10-year-old saying the word zombies. Is this really? I've been watching this. Why am I so in love with zombies? I'm not 10
anymore. I don't know. I mean, like, I figured you would grow out of zombies before you grew out of comics.
Oh, this show is doing its it's running its course on me.
Yeah.
Jeez, this show is not good, guys. I mean, I watch it every week. I don't even know what category to call it, but it's really not good television.
Oh, wait. Technically, this is also a comic.
It is also a comic, yes. It's just not one of the...
It doesn't help.
It's just not Marvel or DC.
It doesn't help.
To me, comic book means Marvel or DC.
Okay.
Superheroes. It's very rigid.
Superheroes.
Yeah, superheroes. Okay. And speaking of superheroes, what the hell have they done with David Morrissey as the governor? Like, that guy is... I mean, just from last season, right? Like, that guy walking through smoke and fire.
I feel like
walking through explosions... Come on.
They try to make him larger than life, but like it doesn't mash. It doesn't mash well with the rest of the atmosphere.
And the universe is very
small. Where it's trying to ground everything in reality, and then you have this guy just like walking through hails of bullets and whatnot.
This guy who's seemingly invincible. Like even Rick doesn't look that invincible compared to this guy.
He doesn't fit this show.
He doesn't fit
the way he's written. I mean,
neither the actor nor the character the way he's written.
Yes.
Right? Like the actor has done something terrible with the governor. Who wasn't a fan favorite in the comic, but he was someone that we loved to root against and that we definitely feared. And, you know, he was a lot different than he is in the show.
He was a solid villain.
Very solid villain. I mean, the most interesting in the show, in the comic, I mean, right? Like, the most interesting.
Yeah.
He's a little happy about that, yeah. He was very, he was very interesting.
Well, there was, like, what else is there? Negan?
Negan, yeah. Yeah. Bad writing, in my opinion. Anyway, so... Looking forward to this upcoming Sunday, and just the season that's about to ensue. We've got new actors coming into the show, obviously, because they've got to introduce new characters. What we don't have, though, are really new settings, it doesn't seem like. Because part of the problem for me with the show is, much like season two, being stuck in one place. And I realize, for the most part, that you're looking for safety, you're looking for security in any survival situation.
Yeah.
Right? And that's... That's what they're living in, this post-apocalyptic, walker-infested world. These guys are really looking for something steady, okay? And I get that. The problem is that with all the characters we have in the show, it's really hard to get invested in any of them outside of maybe fan favorite like Daryl. And
he's going to get his ample time to just, like, you know, act in front of the screen and not get edited out.
Yeah, that's neither like here nor there. But as I was saying... got all these characters, this universe still feels so small, right? And they should really do their best to expand that, but at the same time, they're not even doing enough with the characters they have right now. they're not giving any, like, hardly any of them are getting anything. And the ones that do, I don't really care about them outside of Maggie.
Yeah.
You know?
How about Steve Hume's character?
Glenn? You mean Glenn?
Yeah.
Well, he's part of Maggie.
Okay. He's an accessory to your favorite character.
It's not that she's my favorite character. It's that...
A character that you care about.
Yeah, we're not doing favorite characters. We're not 5 years old. But a character that makes you care about them. Like, she's one of the only ones, you know? And Daryl is obviously cool, you know? Mm-hmm. But outside of them, what else do we got? Like, what else do we have any... They're trying to make this whole thing with Carl. And in the comic book, Carl's not necessarily a lead, but at the same time, he's not ancillary.
Yeah.
In the show, they're kind of revolving everything about the realism between what would happen in this situation to a kid who's been exposed to so much, and Rick's reaction to that, and his reaction to that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, just playing one off the other. It just doesn't work, is my problem. Because I don't care enough about Carl, and I don't care enough about Rick, and it's not exactly the portrayal of either of them, it's just that this show is dealing with themes that it really doesn't know how to handle, in my opinion.
So you're saying, like, the writing stuff is way in over their heads?
Yes.
With the material.
And it doesn't know which way it wants to go. And maybe that's because AMC keeps, you know, shipping out showrunners.
Mm-hmm.
But, that's, I mean, really, this show
is... gonna ruin a lot of momentum.
This show is just bad right now. And it started off season 3 pretty good with, like,
pacing.
Yeah, very good pacing. Like, a lot less dialogue to expose the acting chops or lack thereof of a lot of its leads. And just the writing in general, like, it didn't expose the writing when you don't have that much dialogue going on, you know? Again, these aren't Sorkinese characters, and these aren't Clerks characters. These are not Kevin Smith characters.
I think that's why we also saw a lot of, like, awkward retroactive characterizations, thanks to, like, people not having enough screen time
sloppy
to writing. Showcase their characters. Yeah,
sloppy writing, and it's
just like T-Dog.
It's retroactive, and, you know, mm-hmm. it's something that, you know, I've talked about a few times, and probably off the air, about how they... But we talked about this last year, how they rewrite characters' histories despite what we've seen on the show, mm-hmm. telling us the exact opposite of how they are.
Seems like they're describing a different character.
Yes, exactly. And, I don't know. Like, to me, it's just bad writing all the way around. And, you know, Kirkman is part of the writing staff. He's at least a consultant. He's in on that role. But, I don't know. I haven't... Let's just say I'm going to keep watching, but it's pretty much in the heroes of shows for me. Like Heroes was, where after season 1, which I thought was good, it just kept stringing me along like it was going to get better and going to get better, but it really wasn't. Now I just want to be put out of my misery, mm-hmm. but there's no end in sight for the show because of the viewership and the ridiculous,
which
you know,
is the opposite of
dead,
Heroes.
Which is the opposite of Heroes, yes, but I mean, it's, oh my goodness, like I'm just getting strung along for this ride that I'm not happy with, and I just want to get out.
Here's a question for you. As far as you could tell, is there any hope of reining it back in?
I think I just answered that.
There is none?
I said it's in the Heroes category where it just, you know, just stringing me along, like I said. I'm pretty sure I just answered that question.
I mean, like, in the press releases and whatnot, have you seen anything that interests you at all?
No. Because the governor needs to be gone. They botched that entirely.
Mm-hmm.
They just completely botched that. So they need to get rid of that arc in general, in my opinion. And I mean, they just keep bringing these big characters in, and they got Tyrese, and they've got this. I mean, he's about to lose it, I believe, in the previews. It looks like he loses his sister or whoever she was to him.
Huh.
So he's going to snap, and they have the classic from the comic book just adapted a little bit for screen where he just walks into a pool of zombies and looks like he comes out alive, right? Which is an awesome twist in the comic. But, I mean, this guy is a guy who's supposed to, while being the right hand to Rick, also being the other side that you know, opposes him. But in a healthy way, I guess. Yeah, in a healthy way, though. Mm-hmm. Not like the governor opposes him. And nothing about the governor is healthy. But, anyway, you know, that's what I think about that. However, this is something we talked about a while ago, and I've been harping for a long time on this, and you have not been on the same page as me, about how I don't like Robert Kirkman. And I'm probably one of the only people to say that right now, and that's, you know, that's okay.
His comics are still solid to me.
They're solid, yes. Yeah. They're solid. I didn't read Invincible. All I read is The Walking Dead. All I care about is zombies, you know?
Okay.
Zombie literature, sorry. But we talked about this not too long ago, how he was willing to just kill off anybody. And it's just for shock value, right? Mm-hmm. It's just because he wants you to feel like anybody can go at any moment.
And we juxtapose that to the greatest show on earth, Breaking Bad, where
every
death seemed necessary in order to push the story itself.
Because it's the never most important thing in any story is the story itself, right? Mm-hmm. It's not shock value.
It has to serve the story, not like some kind of like personal vendetta or whatever.
Yes. So when we hear him talking about how he wants to kill off these characters just because people don't want him to kill off these characters, right, and he reacts to the fans like that, I mean, that's just...
Yeah, that's a terrible quote from him.
That's a terrible quote from him. It's all too revealing. It tells me that I definitely have questions about his writing skills in general because of that, or his writing decision-making, I should say, not skills, because mm-hmm. I think he's a good writer. But I mean, other than that, like really, it just pours a, you know, I am just not happy just with that. I don't even know how to say it. Like I can't even describe it without using curse words, so I won't describe it, but it's just infuriates me that someone would hinge on what people want that much. And just be so fickle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, have some stones.
I mean, this is also the same thing that George R.R. Martin talked about, right? How much, like, it fuels him just, like, hearing people talk about how they hated the way he killed his characters or whatnot.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, it was another article where he's like, yeah.
You're talking about the Game of Thrones guy, by the way.
I absolutely love it when people talk about, like, how much they hate me when I kill their favorite characters.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. So in the same vein as that?
Yeah, same vein as that. That's just, I mean, come on, that's just not... It's not good writing at the end of the day. Yeah, serve the story, because the most important thing in the story is the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
The arc. I don't know why I keep doing that. It's not McDonald's. But it's just the arc in general. Serve that. Stick with that. You know? Don't kill off characters like Axel just because you want people to be like, oh, anybody can go at this moment. And Walking Dead has to walk that line. They mm-hmm. really do. So, I don't know. I've pretty much lost hope for this show. I'm going to keep watching it and contributing to the rest of the ratings that it does, but... I'll be sitting with my arms crossed and my lips pouted each time I watch it until it gives me something good. And who knows when that'll be. So it's a good thing I'm not holding my breath. I would die.
I gotta say I'm in the same camp as you. I couldn't even finish the last season. Before we go, I gotta mention one more thing about the governor. He's just way too civil.
What do you mean?
Like in this...
It's pretty well
in the show, he's just like that. The fact that like they were talking to each other, Rick and the governor, in that the first meeting that they had in that abandoned cabin or whatever.
Yep.
Each of them suffered losses within their respective camps.
Yeah.
And then they try to do this gentlemanly thing where they are trying to keep the civil without raising guns at each other. And that just felt so off because...
Let me stop you there.
Okay.
Because you didn't finish it. Okay?
Okay.
But in that same episode, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you remember or if this doesn't impact your opinion at all, but when he gets back to Woodbury, he says, you know, we're going to kill them all. Even when they bring us Michonne, we're going to kill them all.
But I also didn't like the way Rick reacted to that thing, I guess, when he said, bring me Michonne and we could discuss this.
Mm-hmm.
And then he actually considers it.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, this is the same guy that just straight off killed one of the prisoners because he tried to kill him during that whole scuffle.
Yeah, it's not consistent.
Yeah, it's why does this guy get to live and this guy doesn't?
Who's this?
When guy? You have the chance to kill him, the governor, he's right outside. You have your own man hiding out in the woods or outside the shed or whatever, and then you let this guy go, but not the other guy.
Pleading the story out. Apples and oranges to me, in my opinion. One of them is a threat that's right in front of him. And that he knows is going to do something to him if he doesn't get the better of him. Speaking to that the Hispanic guy in the prison.
Yeah.
The other of which just has too much over him and too much that he doesn't know about, I think. It's hard to compare them for me.
I don't know. I just felt like something was off about that whole thing.
Something was off about it, and it's something that they tried to get into. I guess how...
They try to make him way too sophisticated.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that drives me nuts because he's not at all.
I mean, yeah, we are drawing from the comics a lot often, but like still like the way he is characterized here just leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
everything about it, everything about mm-hmm. him, you know?
Just talking about
this. This whole season, he's just, season three, he's just driven me nuts. And I haven't been happy about it from the beginning. I hate the adaptation that they have. I don't know. I'm out on that character for sure. That's not a character I've ever really been happy about, so...
Okay.
We'll move on from Walking Dead, because we're just raining crap on
Walking Dead. This has been right kind of depressing...
A way to end it.
...talk.
Yeah.
Where we're both kind of crapping on the respective shows that we've watched.
Yes, actually, yeah. That's how we've turned out. But that's fine. You know, whatever.
But the two movies that we saw were pretty solid, so go check great, those out.
And, you know, before we head out, mm-hmm. I just want to say... The hate on Miley Cyrus, who just hosted SNL this past Saturday, has gone way too far. Just stop.
That's the internet for you.
Just stop. She's really in that Tony Romo range, that Tom Brady range, where people just stop looking at the talent and they just start hating them because of their public image.
You'll never be able to stop people from like taking one thing and just running with it.
You won't, and you know the internet will create what it will. But yeah. Seriously, these people are ridiculously talented. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and do the Britney girl from like 8 years ago. But seriously, Miley Cyrus, solid episode of SNL, extremely self-aware, extremely talented, knows what she's doing, growing up, you know, and that album Bangers, pretty damn good.
Can't comment, I haven't heard it yet.
That's fine, you know, but people just want to comment on like, you know, oh, the VMA performance and the turn that she's taken from being, you know, Hannah Montana to being, you know, who she is now. Well, news for you. She's still the same person. The only thing is she's growing up in the public spotlight just like everybody else. In that field. Okay? And how she's handling it, I don't have a problem with it. She's still extremely productive. She's making good stuff. And she's extremely talented.
You cannot deny that. I think she's eating this whole thing up.
Her PR agent definitely is, because in showbiz, no press is bad.
From like everything I see of her, her gestures, her expressions, it looks like she's really enjoying this.
She is rock solid.
She is enjoying all the attention
that's been
given to her.
You know, like mentally not affecting her at all. And she is, like I said, completely self-aware. She's on purpose sticking out her tongue at the end of these shows. You know, that Brady Bunch video we saw from Fallon mm-hmm. Last night and today. I mean, she's extremely self-aware, like I said. So, you know, kudos to you, Miley. Team name... Team Miley Cyrus.
I also want to bring up that one meme that you showed me between her and Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Well, a pox on that meme, because she's no longer engaged to Liam Hemsworth.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But Taylor Swift, you know, still a fan, but she's losing me. And maybe I'm turning. Who knows? I'm going from the good girl to the bad girl.
Whatever. I think it's because of your newfound... admiration for Kanye that's driving you away.
I'm a
from
heel
Taylor
now.
Swift.
All of a sudden I'm a heel. They both got their problems.
Alright.
One of them's more honest about it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's really embraced that role. Good for Kanye. Seriously.
And I think that's it for today's show.
You will catch us next week talking. Do we have a preview? Recapping Walking Dead.
Yeah, we'll try not to be so negative. We're still going to be talking about Walking Dead because it's premiering this Sunday.
So he's got to catch up.
Maybe Machete, if we
can watch it. I'm not sure. Okay. We'll see. All
right.
We'll see. And we'll see if it's even worthy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and maybe Dexter?
We're finally going to push Dexter in there, really?
We gotta
I feel like we've been too negative this week. Last week was all positive. This week's been mostly negative.
And people eat up negativity. if you heard about the internet.
It's very true. This thing.
Negativity online, sells.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Well. We'll figure it out. Either way, stay tuned. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Too Cool for Podcast, airing out episode 13.
Bye.